rather erratic, where she is, and she has asked me to stand in. She probably is going to listen from wherever she is. We have members and members of other committee members that are with us here today. We have Ms. Bule, who is the chair of the Audit and Risk Committee. We have Ms. Mbali Mbeka. We have Professor Muronga, Ms. Nsibi, Mr. Vili Van Billion, Advocate Ichomato, Dr. Ashley Naidu, and we have the CEO and his team of executives. I will ask the CEO to introduce his team. Thank you, Chair, if you allow.
You may go ahead, colleagues. may I just verify, thank you so much, Ms. Majata. I just would like to, I see here on the delegation outline, you are the chairperson of the Committee on Human Resources, Social and Ethics. I would just like to verify from yourself and from our committee staff if there was an indication from Uche that a prior indication from Uche that she would like you to lead the delegation. So did our office receive anything prior to now, or were you able to communicate prior to this moment that you'd like to step in, or that you would be stepping in for the chair considering the nature of challenges?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, the chair asked me quite late yesterday and was in communication with the board secretariat, which I thought has shared that information with yourself. If that has not happened, we really apologize for that oversight. There's this commitment that she couldn't get out of for today. So she has that problem of the erratic connection in some rural area outside the town.
Okay, thank you so much. Can I just check from Shanaz, did you receive that communication?
Okay, I have not received communication to that effect.
Okay, all right. No, thank you very much, colleague. I'd just like to implore on yourself to in future ensure that communication was that communication is sent to us in time to ensure that we're able to then prepare accordingly also on ourselves in terms of our expectations on who will be leading the delegation. But we do understand the connectivity challenges in the country. I mean, I'm in Johannesburg in the city, but I'm having challenges this morning. You know, ask members of parliament to stay in Acacia Park, where one would assume that we should have adequate network there, but at times we don't. So we do understand that, however, we always implore on colleagues to ensure that they try their best to find themselves in environments that are conducive. But nonetheless, Ms. Majata, thank you so much for availing yourself this morning, and yourself and the rest of the team may continue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. We thank you for your understanding. Yes, the country at large has serious challenges of connectivity, especially at times when we have a load shedding. The network gets affected as well. Without much ado, I think we will take your suggestion that in the future we should inform the committee accordingly. Without much ado, I will hand over to Dr. Munsami to introduce his team and take us through the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Chair, with your permission, I'm not going to introduce the team just yet. I'm certain you're going to see them during the question and answers. But just to save a bit of time, I'm going to go straight into the presentation itself, if that's okay.
That's fine. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. So first of all, thank you for the opportunity to present. Just to give you a sense of the content of the presentation. We'll just quickly run through, I'm not going to go through this in detail, but just a high-level perspective on the strategic context and then the various programs in terms of performance, the financial aspects, and then some challenges and the road ahead, essentially. So that's the narrative for this afternoon. But just to kick off, just to remind ourselves the strategic goals for the agency. Sorry, I'm just going to switch off my camera. At the top end, SAMHSA primarily exists to develop and deliver a suite of products and services. And this is mainly to government users who actually use the data for policy or evidence-based policy making. So that's the departure point for the success of the space agency. But in order for us to do that, the other objective essentially is the key enabler. So the second objective is around the infrastructure, the ground and space-based infrastructure. The third objective is around the knowledge or, you know, the research and development that we undertake and how that gets posited into the products and services. And then the fourth one is ensuring that we have the warm bodies, the experts in the system. So we have a human capacity program. And then the fifth one, if you take the first four objectives, is how do we position that and ensure that government departments actually use and there's an uptake of the products and services coming out of not just SAMHSA, but from the space ecosystem. So at a high level, those are the strategic goals that we have for the agency. And then just to give you a sense, very quickly, there are five programs within SAMHSA. There's the administration program, that's your finance, SEM, HR, IT, and so on. And then we have a programmatic focus, so there's Earth Observation, and that's a program that essentially looks at remote sensing satellite imagery. We have a space science program that undertakes quite a lot of the science aspects. There's a space weather focus. We have a program in Antarctica. And then we have a space operations. That's our ground segment, which is by far the biggest in Africa. And I'll talk about that a little later on. And then there's space engineering, our engineering component within the agency. So those are the five high-level programs under which we operate within the agency. And just in terms of performance at a high level, we've achieved 82% of our key performance indicators. So we had 17 such indicators for the year, 14 of which were fully achieved and some exceeded. And then there were three targets that we did not achieve, which I will also talk to just now. So just to run through very quickly in terms of the achievements, one of the key aspects in the ACB, if I look at the first one, is the support for master's and PhD students. So we had a target of 50, but we actually achieved to support 60 students. And these are postgraduate students undertaking formal studies. The second one is around the products and services itself, the products and applications. We targeted to achieve about 6, but we achieved 7. And then the third one, which is the national the research productivity score. So we have a metric that actually measures how we perform in terms of research and development. And that includes research publications, grants, NRF rating, how many students graduate, and so on. So it's a composite of different aspects that we undertake in terms of R&D. So we set ourselves a target of 1,300, but we achieved 1,904 in terms of the target itself. And then the fourth one in the top end is our satellite path monitoring rate. So just to give you a sense, we have antennas on the ground that talk to satellites. And so on average, we download data or track satellites, about 15 to 18 satellites per day that come over South Africa. So we bring the data back down. And essentially, for this particular target, we're saying that there must be a 98% uptime. That means our antennas must be operational 98% of the time. And this is despite even the load shedding. So we have a full generator on site that ensure that the antennas are operational. So we've achieved 99.35% uptime of those antennas. And then the bottom end, the total income generated from space operations, we set ourselves 68 million, we generated 75, just over 75 million. And then in terms of SMEs, to some extent, this also speaks to the transformation agenda. We set ourselves a target of 20%, but we pushed quite hard. And so we've actually managed to achieve a target of 51%. So In terms of the total contract expenditure, 51% of our funding went to small, medium enterprise. And then the total contract expenditure to the industry, we said we would expense about 10 million rand to the industry. We've managed to achieve 13.68 million that was dispensed to the industry. We also are busy setting up a new space with an operational center. There's a business case. And we said we would achieve 20% of the target in the last financial year. And this is actually a construction, so you'll see this at the very end. But we've actually achieved 42.8% of the target itself. And then the number of, so the top, the remaining of the top three is around overseas partnerships. We said we would engage in 9 overseas partnerships, but we achieved 13 for the year. In terms of partnerships with other African countries, we were targeting about 9. We achieved about 15. And then also nationally with our sister agencies in South Africa, we said we would engage with about 12 of those entities, but we actually managed to engage in 20 different initiatives across the country. And then on the bottom end, we wanted to ensure that the government departments, so we have a scaling up over the 5 years. So for the last financial year, it was 30% of government departments should actually use our products and services. And we set a target of 30% and we achieved the 30%. And then we also targeted for a number of training interventions. So we want our end users to have the requisite knowledge to be able to use our products and services. And for that purpose, we have a number of training interventions. And so we set ourselves a target of 7, but we've achieved 9. And then we're also trying to transform the agency in terms of into a high-performing agency. And we have a number of initiatives that we said we would undertake. We set ourselves 4 initiatives, and we achieved all 4 to be encountered. Now, just to give you a sense in terms of the targets that we did not achieve, there were 3 of those. The first one relates to the number of youths directly engaged. So we have an outreach program where we essentially go out to the schools. We take a mobile laboratory that we have. We go out and we run experiments at school. And then we also have a science museum on site, or space science museum, where students actually come through and engage with the various experiments we have on site. The problem we had because of COVID-19 and the restrictions and not having access to the school kids, as opposed to trying to achieve the 4,000 students we set ourselves, we actually achieved engaged with 2,937 students. And just recall that normally this target sits around 20, 25,000 students, but because of COVID-19, we could not achieve that level. So we revised the target, but even then we could not achieve that fully because of the COVID-19 restriction. And then another initiative that we have is the development of what is called Digital Earth South Africa. So just to give you a sense, it's called a data cube platform. So we have satellite imagery that goes back to the early 1970s, around about 1972, up until today. So what we do is we take that data, we put it into what is called an analysis-ready data, so that's the ARD, and we stack them in such a way that if you wanted to find out information anywhere in this country, going right back to 1972, it will be within an hour or two, you can essentially get the full data from. Without this kind of platform, it will take you anywhere between 3 to 6 months. So we're now using the 4R to actually facilitate and accelerate the access to data and answering some of the questions. And this is very important for evidence-based policy making. So we had a bit of issue around the licensing and the software, because these have come from abroad, and some contractual issues, but we managed to sort those out. But for the year, we could not fully develop the platform, but we now have in this financial year. And the big one for us, Chair, is an upgraded AIT. So AIT is your assembly, integration, and testing facility. So when you're building a satellite, you have a facility where you actually assemble it, you integrate the satellite, you bring the various components together, and then you actually test it. Because when you're setting it up on a rocket, it's a very a stringent environment. There's vibrations, there's noise, and so on. So you have to make sure those satellites survive that environment. And this facility at the moment currently belongs to Danel. It's called the Hotech facility. And we have funding around about 75 million rand to upgrade the facility, but there's been a long outstanding discussion in terms of the transfer of that facility from Denel into Sansa, and that hasn't happened. So we've reneged in terms of actually that particular indicator. So those are the three indicators that we have not managed to achieve out of the 17. But just to give you a very quick glimpse in terms of the highlights for the last financial year, we did actually celebrate our 10th year anniversary. Sansa was established on the 1st of April 2011. So that essentially takes us now to 10 years of existence. And just in terms of employee demographics share, in terms of the racial profile, 114 or 59% are African, 9% colored, 7% Indian, and 24% white. And persons with disability, we have one at the moment, and 0.5%. And then just to show you how that number of 193 staff members are segmented across the various programs. So the admin program is 44, Earth Observation 22, Space Science has 66 people, and then staff members in Space Ops 57 and Space Engineering 4. But as I said, Space Engineering, we're busy capacitating at the moment. And then in terms of demographics, there are different professional domains. On the top management, we've got one. Senior management, that's mainly at your executive tier level, is 6. And then professional qualified, that's your scientists, engineers, and so on, is 57. And then your technical people, the skilled, is 97. And your semi-skilled is 27. And then the unskilled is just 5. Then, Chair, in terms of transformation, this is something that we are taking quite seriously. And so Sansa is currently finalizing a skills development strategy, and we started this strategy internally, and this started from a conversation with the Minister and the Department of Higher Education and Training. And so we are speaking to engage with the DHEC now that we have a draft strategy. The skills development strategy is not specific to Sansa. It's primarily for the entire space ecosystem, the national space program, essentially. And part of that also includes a transformation element in terms of, when we're looking at skills development, can we embed that as part of the implementation of the strategy? We're also looking at a industry development framework. So we, as part of our mandate, Sansa is meant to support, develop, and stimulate the local industry. So we're looking at an industry development framework, which is actually based on some work that was done by the DTIC in terms of a baseline study. And then we're also looking at an Africa engagement strategy. So at the moment, Africa is gearing up for an African space program. And in terms of the policy perspectives of the African space policy, the national space programs have to position or be bootstrapped to assist in the implementation of the African space program. And that provides a huge opportunity for Sansa or South Africa to take what we have. And a lot of what we're doing is quite unique on the African continent. So we're positioning a lot of that on the African continent. And then, Chair, we also, actually currently we do have a student accommodation on site. So we have about close on to 20 students that can stay on the site. And they're actually supervised by Sansa staff at a master's PhD level. And what we are doing based on our increased growth for the next few years, we want to increase the number of students that we support, but that means we have to increase our accommodation. So we found the funding internally to expand our student accommodation, and so that should be finished in the next year or so that we can accommodate more students and supervise more students inside. As I indicated, we do have a research chair and experts, and they postgraduate students will be working with the research chair in terms of their own studies, and they will also be based partly within the University of the Western Cape as well. So a lot of training and intervention support, bursary, scholarships, and as I indicated, a lot of that is focused on students from previously disadvantaged backgrounds. And Sansa also has an employment equity plan, and we've just put together a triple BEE strategy. We brought in consultants to assist us to understand the codes and put a strategy together so we can start implementing. And already we have started to report against these plans. And I think there's some positive progress as well. And Sansa is also actively involved. The DSI, I think I've seen Mr. Imran Patel here. who's leading the SDI Transformation Committee, and then I think Sandra is also playing a pivotal role in terms of contributing and inputting into the transformation of the SDI sector as well. Some other initiatives that, in fact, later this month, the UK National Space Centre is coming through for a delegation. So they have an outreach program in the UK, and they've got some funding from the Lloyds Foundation, and they want to do outreach to schools, in, not just in South Africa, in the SADC region, but they want to partner with SANSA to implement the outreach program. And we're also thinking at the moment in terms of piloting broadband access to a few schools. So SANSA is currently supporting an initiative called the Teleport Services. So there's a whole thousands of satellites actually going up in terms into a constellation. And this constellation of satellites will essentially allow global internet access. So you don't have to actually rely on your land-based network. You can get internet access from space in the next year or two. And so we're trying to see whether we can make some of the, use some of that technology and pilot that to a few schools, especially in the very deep rural areas. So you can get internet access in the rural communities as well through these new technologies coming up forward. So that's, Chair, just a sense in terms of our transformation initiatives. Just some key challenges in terms of where we are heading. We were earmarked as SIP22, the Strategic Infrastructure Project 22, on the Space Infrastructure Hub. So this was about 4.5 billion rand investor funding, or we say blended financing, that we are looking at. And what we are doing at the moment is concluding. In fact, earlier this week on Monday and Tuesday, we had a workshop to refine some of the bankable feasibility study models, the financial models. And the idea is that we will finish this by next month and then make that available to Infrastructure South Africa. And the whole Space Infrastructure Hub is looking from building a whole suite of satellites, a new ground segment, improving our data segment, and then also producing more products and services. And along that value chain that I just described, we're also bringing in the industry into the ecosystem as well. So we're trying to stimulate the industry development and support, and that also has spin-offs in terms of economic and social impact, and actually sustainable impact as well, because to be quite honest, about 60% of the work for the sustainable development goals can only be done through satellite platforms, like climate change. 60 to 70% of the essential climate variables come from satellites, not from the ground-based platform. Another challenge we have, Chair, is the EOSAT-1 completion is still resolved, and with the DG, we had several meetings because the prime contractor on this one is Denel, and that's proving to be a challenge at the moment, especially given the state that Denel is. And we've not seen a requisite cooperation from Denel in terms of us allowing to put an option in the table to complete the EOSAT-1 project. We also somewhat limited in terms of broader space industry support because of the resource pool and the underfunding. And that still remains a concern, despite the fact that we are looking for additional investments, like the space infrastructure. But just to be wary that those kind of investments, we send that would have to pay back. It's not a grant. It's an investment. So there's intentions for returns on investments in that. And then the last one, Chair, top right-hand corner, as I indicated, the Minister Nzimande, we did a spot-turning event on the 9th of March. And we commenced on with the construction of the 24/7 Space Weather Center. On the top right is a artist's view of what the center would look like when it's finished. And the bottom end is the construction. So this was taken on the 2nd of November. So you can see the semblance between the artist's view and what we have on site already. So this building will more or less be finished in the next month or two. And we're hoping to have it fully operational in the first quarter of next year, and we'll do a formal launch again of this new space weather center. I want to stop the Chair. That's the end of my slide, and I want to thank you for your attention. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Philippe. I'd just like to check from the Chair of the Ethics Committee. Adaja, is there anything you'd like to add?
Yes, To actually emphasize and explain on some of the few things, Chair and the members, the CEO has highlighted to the SIH, the Space Infrastructure Hub, which is an infrastructure project from the SIH, from the SIP. We regard this project as quite a critical mega project for SAMHSA, not only for SAMHSA, but for the space ecosystem, as we see this as going to include the entire industry, and we see it as will put the space industry on a growth trajectory that we have not seen in the past. So we are quite excited about this project. However, there's so much work still to be done. The CEO has highlighted that they are finishing the bankable feasibility study. This project will also require us to have borrowing capacity as the agency, and that requires the approval of the minister with that of the National Treasury. That is quite important for the PPC to take note and probably have some form of assistance if required and if necessary. The CEO has also mentioned the regional space weather for Africa, which is a result of the ICAO regulations. It's also another critical project for us to actually provide this information for the entire African continent. He has mentioned that there is a student accommodation that is being built on site, and he actually meant the site in Hermanas, which is a space science site, which is also something very big that is going to accommodate students that will be under the leadership of the chair that will be based there. One area I wanted to highlight, Chair, is the AIT facility, Assembly Integration and the Testing Facility. We sort of quite delayed in upgrading and refurbishing that center. It's in Grabo. The center, as the CEO has mentioned, is under Danel, and interactions with DPE are underway. However, we have quite serious challenges. And with that challenge of ownership not being sorted, we are going to have serious challenges, hiccups, as far as even implementing the SIH, because we require the AIT facility to be up and running, to be at its top-notch technology for us to be able to work on the SIH on a number of satellites that we are going to build, and the ground segment and the HCD program that we are intending to have. Those are the three issues, Chair, that I thought we can highlight to the committee, for which probably the committee with their respective committees could probably assist on. One last issue, Chair, is the one of the unqualified audit that the CEO has mentioned. Yes, we really take that issue. It's for the first time that SAMHSA is getting an unqualified audit, and we're taking it quite seriously. It has been as a result of misclassification of the items, because we've been using manual Excel, but now we have introduced the ERP system, an electronic system which is going to pick up on all these problems. And as he has mentioned, investigations have been undertaken, a disciplinary has been instituted for those colleagues or staff members who have really disappointed us in that manner. So there is consequent management that has been applied, and we are very much alert that this does not happen in the future. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Masaja, and thank you very much to Mr. Musami.
will now note hand of members who speak to. I think from my side, just while I wait for the hand of members to go up, I just like to verify that I am okay. Now I am. I want to see if the mic break up and down, so I do see that I am audible. I think from my side, indicate that, you know, just out of inquisition, noting that Sansa has yet again received an unqualified audit opinion with material findings, what has there been any reflection on what could be done to get the organization to a point where it would receive a going into the future, just, you know, if there's been any reflections on that in particular, clean audit, meaning with no findings. And then another question that I have is, considering our concerns with regards to the capacity of the organization's finance function, could we have an update regarding the stability of the office of the CSO? And then you have clarified that with regard to the matters relating to Haltech that denials the current owner still, and that there is some work being done in order to address that. And perhaps the question that we would want to ask is, what exactly is needed to resolve that particular matter? To make it possible for the organization to conclude on that. On page 86 of the annual report, the Audit and Risk Committee report stated that it is concerned with the expertise and adequacy of resources within the finance function. Has that situation been assessed, and what mitigating actions have been implemented to improve this function? And then I don't know if there's been any analysis that's been made with regards to the key skills and capabilities that are lacking nationally within the space sector. If there were any contributions that you yourselves made to the recently held National Skills Conference. So I think those are the only questions I think, or comments I have from my side as well. But also, I hope you didn't have a party. Acknowledge 10 years of existence, because you know we didn't get an invite. So I hope you did not have a party without us. I see the hands of Honorable Lisi and Honorable Mashlati are up. We'll take Honorable Lisi and then Honorable Mashlati. Your mic is open, Mashlati. No, but I think you will close.
Thanks, Chair. I also hope, am I audible? Chair?
You are, Honorable Lizzie.
No, thank you very much. I heard myself there, so I thought maybe the problems of Honorable Mkhatshwa from earlier on have miraculously caught my device as well. Thank you very much, colleagues, and good day to the board and management leadership of SANSA. I think also on the lighter note, I want to agree with Honorable Mkhatshwa that I hope there was no party without us there at SANSA celebrating 10 years of existence. on the Earth Observation Satellite build project, which has been placed on hold since 2018-2019 financial year, what options are you considering there to ensure funding for that? how much funding is needed to complete that satellite build? And noting that over 340 million has been spent on that build since it commenced in 2015. What has been realized from this investment to date? Okay, this one, Honorable Mukacho asked, wanted to ask about the current ownership of that building, the AIT, that the Hautech building that we wanted to, that we are buying from Dinel. And on the, I'm happy to hear from the chair, or the standing chair now, or this, the chair may have missed that part, that there's consequence management being undertaken for those who did not, you know, who made sure or who could not provide sufficient answers for the audit outcome to be to regress from last from the last financial year. And on the okay, hold on. Yeah. On the audit outcome, you know, it says that there were serious material findings on compliance with legislation resulting from material misstatements identified in the financial statements, which were also submitted late. And I hope on your consequence management, you know, all of those things are attended to. We can't really, in this sector and this Department of Science and Innovation, really we can't have problems of submitting late, and our financial statements has got misstatements and all of those things. So I think I hope, Chair, that the consequence management will really be serious, so that we are not, you know, caught napping again. And then what progress has been made with the recruitment of the new CFO? How far are you with that part? I think those are the only questions for me. But other than that, I think the good work that you are doing in that space of the space is welcomed. But also, maybe, I'm not sure, well, it's a side issue, this one, but is it possible, this one who hack our phone, is it possible really using some of your, because we know that cell phone towers and all of those things, some of them use your networks. So is it possible really for somebody to listen to another person's cell phone without that person having an idea that they are being listened to? You know, and I'm taking advantage here, Chair, because this is their space. Maybe they can just clarify us there. And also some myths, I'm not sure if it's a myth or fact, they can correct that. If people are listening to your phone, they can listen to it even when you are not on a cell phone call. So meaning if I'm seated with my family and we are discussing our issues and my phone is somehow hacked, they can listen to me without me making a cell phone call. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good afternoon to colleagues. Clara, I've got only two issues to speak to. First and foremost,
if it's my network or the webs, but can I just answer?
It's understandable. Am I audible, Flalo?
No, we are missing,
but we can hear you now. Lost you for a second, but we had gotten you back. Can you just attempt again?
Hey, if I'm not audible enough, I'll pass because number of issues that I wanted to speak to, I think Honorable Lizzie had heard them.
Okay, all right. No, that's fine. Then we'll, thank you so much. You can also take the opportunity of writing in the chat box.
Audible
No, we're still struggling. So what I'm suggesting is that if there are matters, I hear you saying that Honorable Lizzie.
Okay, I'll pass them. I'll pass. It's okay.
But I would recommend that you could also write them in the group if need be. I would then like to propose that while Santa has noted the questions that we had to them, can we please move on to the next entity? So Santa, you will just note the questions that members have asked, and then we will give the entities an opportunity to respond at the same time, so one after the other. So I will hand over now to the CSIR, led by the board chairperson, Prof. Majorzi, together with the doctor, with Dr. Dlamini, who is the CEO. It is now, let us see, now 2 o'clock, and you have 45 minutes. So we should be done by 2:45, if not before that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee, honorable members, and also colleagues from other entities who are here. My name is Thokozani Majorzi, as the chair has mentioned. I chair the CSIR. So with me here, I do have the CEO and the executive at the CSIR who will all be participating in this presentation. As you've always done in the past, what I'll do is just give the overview of where the organization is and maybe where it's going, and then hand over to the CEO to dwell on detail. So if you can maybe migrate a bit further to the first slide. So thank you very much. So just as an overview, Chair, it is very clear that the decision that we took about 2 years ago to reposition the organization to talk directly to the mandate, the founding mandate of the organization as enshrined in the Act, was actually the best decision. And that is to come closer to industry and accentuate the I in the CSIR. Mm-hmm. So it looks like that is starting to bear fruit. We saw a turn in the curve in terms of our bottom line in the last financial year, which really is an indicator that the organization is starting to really hit hard where it matters most. I'll switch off the video here. And the second point that one would like to really bring home is that, as you would know, we did step up to the plate when called upon at the onset of COVID. We still continue to play a very meaningful role in that space, responding to all the COVID challenges as and when called upon. And we strongly believe that part of that is that we were ready when this happened on many fronts as an organization. I think this multidisciplinary feature of the organization has really put us in good stead in as far as responding to COVID-19 is concerned. And again, talking to the strategy, we've increased our collaborations and partnerships with various entities, by the way, across the science spectrum because of the cross-disciplinary nature of our organizations. And then we continue to accelerate innovation and developing the technological solutions on various fronts. And the CEO is going to talk to those in the presentation in some detail. We've established a legacy over the years of receiving unqualified audits. We have not tainted that legacy even this time round. So we had an unqualified audit in this audit session, and we are very proud of that. We are proud of where the organization is going. So I think we'll continue on that front going forward. And to that, we have, as the board, really congratulated the work of the CEO, Dr. Dlamini, with his executive, who have really, really worked very hard under really, really, really almost impossible circumstances. We've really, really extended our gratitude to them for really putting the steering the organization in the right direction under impossible conditions. The issue of transformation at CSIR is very high on our agenda, particularly when it comes to issues of the chief scientist or what pertains to chief scientists, principal researchers, and the like, the highest rungs of the scientific ladder. We have been of the view as the board, right from the outset, that we are not seeing transformation in those levels. I mean, when we started, or when this CEO started with a sizable number of his executive team, because most of his executive team is relatively new, we didn't have an African, if I may call it that, African, South African chief scientist at the CSIR. And this was very difficult for me as the chairperson of the board to answer questions when people ask why. You'll see that in the presentation that is going to be given to you, we've really turned that around now. We do have a number of South African, African scientists who are chief scientists at the CSIR, and that is through the effort. It's because of a decisive and dedicated effort to make sure that we put systems in place and create a fertile ground for growth for people of talent. And that is exactly starting to bear fruit. So we are almost certain that when we come back here next year, the message will be even more colorful. And then lastly, I must say that everything that we do, Chair and honorable members of the committee, takes cognizance of the fact that there are parameters within which we have to operate. And those are set really by a number of government strategies. Those parameters really define how and where we should operate. And foremost among those going forward really will be this South African Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan post-COVID-19, which is really relating that CSIR is a very, very key role in bringing the country back to its economic, favorable economic stance going forward. I think with those words, maybe, Chair, if you allow, let me hand over to the CEO, Dr. Dlamini, to take us further beyond this point. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Professor Majors, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and members of the Portfolio Committee. Good afternoon. I have with me the full complement of the CSIR executive team, except Dr. Masterumule, who unfortunately couldn't attend this engagement today. The members of the executive team will introduce themselves during the course of the presentation if they come in to speak to certain elements of the presentation. So thank you for the opportunity to share with you our annual report for the financial year 2021. They will take the report as read, and given the fact that we only have 45 minutes for the presentation, we'll try and go over it fairly quickly. If I can summarize the 2020-2021 financial year of the CSIR as a year of significant progress and resilience. So I say this because in the past financial year, the CSIR in South Africa, of course, we were all confronted with the challenge of the COVID-19 pandemic. We had to adapt to new ways of working. We saw a significant reduction in our income, including the parliamentary grant. It was understandable under the circumstances that the country found itself. Then our plans for 2021 were disrupted by the pandemic, and we've had a real and a significant impact in terms of our business. Despite this, though, I think the organization showed a lot of resilience. We showed our mental and delivered perhaps our best performance over the past 4 years. We achieved or exceeded performance for 81% of our key performance indicators. And we're beginning to see, and you'll see this when we talk to our key performance indicators, a healthy balance between scientific development and industrial development outputs and outcomes, which is something that we've been talking about, I think, ever since we started on this journey of the implementation of our new strategy, as the chair already indicated. Our asset base has stabilized and is beginning to grow steadily. We've also made significant progress, I think the chair indicated, in terms of the transformation of our asset base, especially at the senior level, particularly chief researchers. Our private sector income grew by 90% compared to the previous year, and our net profit grew by more than 135% compared to the previous year. I think this is a synopsis of depth contained in the next set of slides that we'll share with yourselves. So we'll cover these points in detail in the presentation. You can go to the next slide. Starting with our mandate. Our mandate remains that of performing directed research in multidisciplinary technological innovation to foster scientific and industrial development, and of course in so doing contribute towards improving the quality of life of the people of South Africa. I think our work is directed, as we've always said, directed towards creating an impact in industry, in society, as well as in the government. Next slide. So we've translated this mandate into a vision and a mission statement, which is indicated in this slide. I think last year's performance is perhaps true testimony of how we are beginning to deliver on this vision of being accelerators of social economic prosperity in South Africa through leading innovation. Next slide. These are the values that guide how we conduct ourselves and how we engage with our stakeholders. We pursue excellence in everything that we do. We are a people-centered organization. We conduct ourselves with integrity, and we value and welcome collaboration in terms of the work that we conduct within the organization. These values span ethic, and in a way they define the kind of organization that the CSIR is becoming. It is indeed becoming an ethic organization in terms of excellence. I think our strategy will deliver these following intents. We wish to contribute, and we are already contributing now, towards inclusive growth of the South African economy. We wish to improve the sustainability of South African enterprises through the commercialization of the intellectual property coming out of the organization. We should demonstrate the impact and relevance of this industrial development through the work that we do with our partners in government as well as in industry. And this happens, of course, through the commercialization of the intellectual property that we generate, leading to the development of new products, new enterprises, and new services that support, as I said earlier, government, industry, and society. So it's about growth, it's about impact, it's about sustainability and relevance. And that drives what we are trying to achieve in terms of our strategy. Next slide. Our five strategic objectives represent a balanced scorecard and are key to the realization of our strategy. And these allow the CSR to focus on cutting edge and transformative research and development. They enable us to support the reindustrialization of South Africa through the work that we do, allow us to deliver on our role towards the creation of a capital state. They enable us to invest in the development and transformation of human capital and infrastructure, as well as lastly, to ensure that our income streams are diversified, that we are financially sustainable as an organization, we conduct our business in a manner that will support good corporate governance, as we'll indicate later in terms of how we perform in this regard. Again, budgeted loss of 83 million, which was brought about by the reduction, particularly in our parliamentary accounts. So we're able to balance that with not more profitable private sector and similar contracts that we executed within the organization. Then we're beginning to see a very positive development in terms of the percentage of private sector income within the organization, which is aligned with our strategy of reducing our heavy reliance on the public sector, and of course attracting more private sector income to complement. We also achieved BBB rating of 2 at the end of the last financial year, and I'm pleased to say that in the assessment that was done.
So if we look at the total, our CSIR staff base, we have 243 employees, and the chair earlier on spoke of the transformation and also the importance of increasing our staff base and that being high on our agenda. So if I were to just to take you through the numbers, so we look at the black South Africans within the CSIR, so we have the total in terms of the percentage that of 72.3%. And then the total set base, we have 68.8%, that translates to 1,474. And this talks to our focus and also on ensuring that we deliver on our mandate. And as the CEO said, we've seen a growth in the set base by 8% compared to the previous year. And if to focus on the set base, of the total set base, we have black South Africans, and that is 66.5%. And the females within the set base, South Africans. So we've seen a growth as well, in terms of our females, female South African, in the set base. And that's key for us, in our transformation. And also, if we're to look at people with disability, so we're sitting at 2.8%. And if we're to compare that, with the numbers or percentages that were reported by the Department of Labor recently, so nationally, in terms of people with disability who are employed, we're sitting nationally at 1.3. But at the CSIR, we've exceeded that, and we're sitting at 2.8, which is a good performance. And we're putting a lot of work to ensure that we're increasing that number, but also ensuring that we're creating an environment that is conducive for people with disabilities. And in terms of the development, as a CSIR, we put a lot of development in terms of our staff academically, and also in terms of transformation, both in set and in support. And if we look at 2020, 47 staff members obtained their masters as well as doctorates in line with the organization's value of excellence. So that's how the CSIR we perform. But if we look at that has contributed as well in terms of increasing the master's qualifications within our state base, where we currently have 426, and also in terms of the PhD, we have 308 within the CSIR. So next slide, please. So the next slide, I'm just going to give you just a feel in terms of some of the programs or strategic initiatives that we put in place to ensure that they support the mandate and also to ensure that we've got a strong pipeline to build a strong set base within the CSIR. Starting with the bursary programs, and here we're talking where we're targeting undergraduate and postgraduate students in order to increase a pool of highly qualified individuals in the STEM field. And here we're partnering with the likes of CSIR, the NRF, and the various tutors, and we have 587 students that are currently sponsored. With the majority, again, the emphasis being on transformation. And then the graduate in training program. So here, where we focusing on the holistic development of recent graduates to attain their professional registration in the areas of expertise. So we currently, in this program, we have 58 graduates that are being mentored by the CSR experts. And then in terms of, we have 15 of those, and we have a number of other programs such as internship programs, etc. So next slide, please. Right, the Youth Employment Service. So this is a program that we're running for the second year now. Right, and here it's focusing on unemployed youth. And the focus is on unemployed black graduates, right, where we place those graduates, right, with the SMMEs. And the CEO earlier on, right, touched on the accelerated research and development program. And here we still have good results, right, in terms of the program. So the chair spoke about that we now have the two black South African chief researchers. And recently we did an assessment, and we're seeing good results as well, right, in terms of increasing the cohort, right, of the black South African researchers. Right, and then so in terms of the leadership and management development program, so here is where we're ensuring that we develop, right, our own staff, right, in key competencies in terms of junior, middle, right, and executive development program. So this is key, right, to the CSR in terms of ensuring that we support the members. That's all. Thank you. Next slide. Right, so I'm
going to
hand over to
you. Thank you very much. So the CSR has also had been involved in terms of supporting national response. I just give an example of some of the projects that we've undertaken in terms of supporting the national response to COVID. The one example perhaps that I can speak to is a fairly recent development that was in the media recently around the work that we did with a startup company called Cape Bio, which is licensing CSR IP. Between the CSR and Cape Bio, we've now developed a COVID-19 test kit, which will now enable South Africa to have the capacity to produce these test kits that can then be used for testing for COVID. And this is now going through the regulatory approval processes, and in a reasonable period of time, we expect this then to be broadly available for South Africa to utilize in terms of the test kit. Of course, this would have a significant impact in terms of our ability to manage this pandemic, which is very likely to be with us for quite some time into the future. Next slide. Next slide, please. If now one goes into some specific examples, and maybe just stay with the previous slide. These are two examples of work that we did in terms of, one is about supporting industry, and the other one is around the careful state. And the first example is work that we did around supporting the forensic services within South Africa and African mutuals, of course, in terms of the identification of deceased individuals. I think there's a challenge, particularly in instances where the fingerprints are no longer well defined because of various reasons in terms of the identification of those individuals. We've developed a technology which is based on something called OCT, optical coherent tomography, to look at the imaging of fingerprints that have deteriorated, and then enabling the forensic services and a private mortuaries to be able to identify those particular individuals. We are now running a pilot of this particular technology And we expect that this will, of course, have a significant impact in terms of addressing this particular challenge that the country faces on a regular basis. I think the example at the bottom is about work that we did with a private sector company as part of our technology localization drive.
Yeah, I can hear you.
That some of the pipes that they consume are required to coat
the pipes
to prevent them from corrosion and other forms of contamination.
Yeah, I can hear you.
To do this coating, coating from Australia. The point is, it's a very specific polymer that has very unique characteristics. Working with this company, we've been able to now localize this within South Africa. They're able to produce this polymer locally, and of course, they're then able to do this without having to depend on the imported material from Australia. So the company that is now producing this polymer based on the intellectual property coming out of the CSIR for how long more. And of course, it has a huge impact, first in terms of cost for them, but also in terms of access to this critical raw material that you require for their pipes. Okay, next slide. Yeah, Dr. Chikwambe, if you can speak to this slide, please.
Thank you very much. In this particular example that we saw, we are trying to bring competitiveness to the small-scale farmers with respect to how they manage their farms and improve productivity. We've developed a precision agriculture information system that we call PIES, which uses machine learning algorithms and AI to translate the remote sensing images that are captured by drones and satellites into very detailed maps and statistics of the condition of the soil, where farmers are growing their crops and the crop growth parameters nearly on a real-time basis. This naturally then aids the farmers to be able to understand and respond to the nutrient status of their crops, to the disease pest infestations, and to be able to act on this intelligence so that they become highly productive and competitive. Again, in the agriculture and agro-processing sector, we're looking to work side by side with our partners and with government to develop a highly transformed cannabis industry. The CSIR is looking at how we can create high-value products from cannabis by using a variety of extraction technologies, characterization of cannabinoids, and so on, to really try and benefit smallholder farmers and enterprises. And the idea here is that we provide them with skills and infrastructure to lower their barriers to entry to those aspects of the sector that are more valuable than simply the smoking and other simpler type technologies. Associated again with cannabis, we use the low cannabinoid cannabis or hemp to really try and develop new industries on the basis of materials and composites that use the fiber from hemp. And to this end, we have created a partnership with the Kuha IDZ. We've relocated, and are still in the process of relocating some of our infrastructure from Port Elizabeth to the Kuha IDZ, where we can actually execute a program that creates products and develops novel processes for producers of hemp to be able to participate in the market of high-value composite materials that come out of this fiber. In both the extraction and the fiber, we have lab-scale technologies that we are ready to pilot. Next slide. The next slide deals with smart surveillance for safer correctional facilities, where the CSIR has developed and is piloting a camera-based imaging and alerting system for wide area surveillance in support of intrusion detection for our correctional services. So we are partnering with a private sector company to develop a system of cameras that can detect movement. It uses radar and video images and from day and night cameras. And in fact, an attempted intrusion was detected at the facility, and the reaction thwarted the intentions of the people who were trespassing. And so no theft incidents during the period when this system was deployed were further detected. And then using again some of our technologies, we have been able to support the township and rural economies, focusing specifically on youth and the disabled by providing wireless network infrastructure for affordable broadband internet connectivity. This project is supported by the UNDP through the Japanese government, and the UK government is also joined through their Foreign and Commonwealth Development Office. Says one of these programs has been rolled out in the Eastern Cape, in KZN and in the Free State, and we're looking to really roll out the second phase to create 10 more SMMEs that will be controlled by women, youth, and the disabled as part of supporting the needs of our society. Next slide. Government has made very clear the intention of the country to drive the economic reconstruction and recovery process post-COVID. And the CSR is undertaking a variety of activities to support government in this regard, looking at infrastructure rollout, where in agriculture and agro-processing, for example, we provide infrastructure that allows people to make higher value products from agricultural-based products so that they can break through into higher value markets through our infrastructure, our skills that we make available to them. In the chemicals cluster, again, we're focusing on in celebrating the awarding of the national nanomicro device manufacturing facility, which will focus largely and consolidate the capabilities of the country in making nanomicro devices, a lot of which are required for things such as diagnostics. And we have a supercritical pilot scale infrastructure facility that has got the potential to really boost our ability to make probiotics for humans, for livestock, for chicken, for fish locally because of the ability to encapsulate such bugs with supercritical CO2. In the energy space, we're looking at energy test beds, and we're also looking at supporting ESCOM and municipalities with the integration of renewable energy technologies to the main grid. And in chemicals, we're looking again in employment stimulation to create jobs and support livelihoods. We are working on a program with a suite of open access infrastructure, the BIDF, which works on value addition of forestry and forestry waste products, byproducts of the industry and so on, to create new high-value platform chemicals. The BIDC, which works as an open access platform for the biotech sector, and the NIDF, which leverages our capabilities in nanotechnology to really support advanced industries. The previous example on industrial coatings for pipes for whole lung mall is one of the examples. And I have alluded to our intention to create in excess of 25,000 jobs by working with the KUHA IDZ to create a facility again where farmers and industrialists can access, and we're putting a bid to Treasury to really resource that particular facility. In the drive for industrial growth and localization of manufacturing, we are creating value-added products from indigenous knowledge, and we're focusing on the development of cannabis-based products, as I already alluded to stimulate growth of the cannabis industry with a particular focus of supporting small-scale farmers who are Black, who've been excluded from participating in the large initiatives that we see crop up, and we can see if we can bring them into the mainstream. And then lastly, on the next generation health, we have capabilities in digital precision medicine to support the One Health concept, or where we deal with diseases that can affect both humans and livestock, and then to advance healthcare outcomes by looking at adverse drug reactions, because of our ability to look at how different people with different genetics in the South African population are likely to react to particular drugs. So I guess this, in a nutshell, summarizes just a vignette or just a few samples of what we're trying to do in support of strong recovery of the economy post-COVID. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Chitukwa. Next slide, please. I would like to ask Mega to speak to these slides around infrastructure investments that we've made in the recent past with very generous support from National Treasury in the Department of Science and Innovation. If you can take 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, CEO. It's just to emphasize that one of the key elements of implementation of a strategy is investing in capability development, and infrastructure investment is one of those. The CEO just mentioned the funding from National Treasury and the Department of Science and Innovation. I just want to highlight two initiatives that are very relevant in light of where the economy is and the challenges we've been facing. And that's the learning factory to support manufacturing, particularly Industry 4.0. This facility provides an industrial platform for research, development, and transfer of cutting-edge technologies, skills, and best practices associated with digital transformation. It will also perform 4IR readiness benchmarking for new product development and process innovation. The other facility that we're currently developing is the pharmaceutical innovation platform, which is being established to commercialize active pharmaceutical ingredients, the APIs, manufacturing in South Africa. This is all the more relevant in light of the recent COVID epidemic in terms of building local capabilities. So the focus will be on production of both small molecules and biological APIs using modern manufacturing technologies. This facility will make production more automated, it will be modular and cost efficient. Thank you very much to you. I thought let me just highlight those two. We can move on to the next slide on strategic partnerships. Our strategic partnership portfolio is growing and getting deeper and stronger. We collaborate with partners in the private sector, in state-owned enterprises, government, higher education institutions, and international organizations. A few of those have already been mentioned with PUHA, IFET, as well as the UNDP, who we've also signed now an agreement during the first quarter of this year. The DPSA has been an incredibly important partner to us in terms of partnering with us on our offerings on COVID-19. In particular, they've supported the revamp and development of one of our PCR COVID-19 testing laboratories, which has assisted the National Health Laboratory Services in terms of expanding the testing capacity in our country. Together with DBSA, they've also supported or collaborated on the development of the ventilators, which have also received positive feedback during this pandemic. The other partnership worth noting is our relationship with AudaNEPET, which takes us into the African continent. AudaNEPET is actually setting up a center of excellence at our CSIR campus in Stellenbosch, and the center of excellence is focused on science, technology, and innovation. Deloitte and Siemens support us in terms of 4IR. In particular, these two organizations support us in the establishment of the West Affiliated Center on the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is a mandate that we received from the Department of Science and Innovation. Thank you very much, CEO. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kung. The Advocate Kennedy, you want to speak to the last slide on our interventions around COVID-19, internal interventions?
Thank you, CEO, honorable members. I will briefly address you on the CSR's response to COVID-19. The CEO has already spoken to some of the impacts experienced by the CSIR, but the onset of COVID has also affected Team CSIR and the way in which we operate, with a significant number of staff and contractors and tenants on our site, and their various families reporting COVID-19 infections. As a CSIR, we regrettably also lost 3 colleagues as a result of the disease. We have aligned our response to COVID to speak to our core value of being people-centered, focusing on the health and safety of our staff, and how we can facilitate a safe working environment with a specific area and risk response and analysis to ensure that we address the specific risks as they pertain to the various workplaces that we have. Equally, particularly important, we have renewed our focus on the psychosocial well-being of staff and ensuring the availability of adequate professional support and educational sessions through our wellness program. These efforts are continuously being renewed and aligned with prevailing regulations under the Disaster Management Act. And there is a focused encouragement of, and more recently also the facilitation of vaccination at our workplaces. We have seen a slight increase in the numbers reflected in the COVID-19 tracker as reflected in the presentation, but fortunately not significantly since the preparation of this report. Thank you. I'll pause there, and I believe this concludes the CSIR presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Kennedy. I think this then brings us to the end of our presentation, the Honourable Chair and members. Perhaps I can hand back then to Professor Majozi for some concluding remarks. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Dr. Zamini. Thank you very much, the team there. Chair, I think that was our story, and I think it's very clear. Some of the things that you heard today are things you've heard in the past, but there are also a number of new developments that are standing out. So we'll be now in your hands on this point.
Thank you very much to colleagues from the CSIR, both the Chair and the CEO. Can I note hands for our members to seek to engage? Members who seek to engage. I think from my end, firstly perhaps let's commend yourselves for, you know, receiving a clean audit, and perhaps also commend you for taking action against officials who, you know, committed the four offences that you spoke to. And so I see, we do note though that in the two instances, no action was taken because those employees were no longer part of the CSIR. Which I think Honourable Boshoff would probably want to say, even if they're no longer there, there should be measures of consequence management nonetheless. But I also think I have one question with regards to page 73 of the annual report. They state that the CSIR raises the fact that the National Treasury regulations hamper yourselves from contracting directly with government and state-owned entities, which results in a loss of revenue opportunities amounting to approximately 450 million rand annually. And so I think the question in my mind, particularly I think to the department, I don't know if DG is still on the platform, or if there are any colleagues from the department that could assist in providing clarity on this particular matter regarding, you know, if there have been any actions taken by the department to assist entities with this regard. And of course, I mean, we do consider the fact that perhaps through the decadal plan, there could be conversations around the coordination of the budgets to assist in addressing this particular matter. But also maybe if the department could bring us into light as to what the reasons are of Treasury for not approving the applied exemption. So I think from my side, that's perhaps just the one question that I had. And maybe if, you know, this particular issue has come up in conversations with regards to the role that science and innovation can play in relation to the economic reconstruction and recovery. So that's it from my side. And it's a question really that is placed maybe perhaps with the department, if there are any colleagues from the department. I see Honourable Boshoff's hand is up. Honourable Boshoff, can we go ahead?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I would also like to welcome this presentation. I must say anything from the CSIR is always very stimulating, and I, the the CEO didn't explicitly said what Dr. Nelwan Mondo, now I pronounced the name wrong, I wrote it down, but I don't have it with me, from the NIF said, and that is that transformation must also imply excellence, otherwise it's not worth the while. But I don't want to go into that, and I also don't want to go into the issues that I had during last year, because I think that has been dealt with quite well. What I would like to ask is about the Ms. Chikwamba, the Precision Agriculture Information System, which apparently, if I understand correctly, focuses on previously disadvantaged areas, very remote rural areas, where I believe it is not focusing on commercial farmers. So what I would like to know is how would the farmers upon which it is aimed in fact access the information that that is available. Just that, let's say that interface between very high level or high quality scientific information being collected with you know, the newest technology, and then handing that information over to the people who actually have to make use of it. It's not a critical question, it's a question for information. I'm curious about how one is going to go about to do that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bosho. Honourable Mashadzi.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not sure if I'm audible now. All right, thank you very much. Che, let me take this opportunity to really welcome both the presentations by Sasa and R. I'm quite happy with both entities. I'm raising this issue of Sasa because I couldn't speak at that time due to network. But if I'm even given an opportunity to really emphasize on the work that they're doing and the fact that they are consequence management in as far as the audit outcomes referred to in the AG's report. We are quite happy with the fact that there are steps taken, and we will be getting a progress thereof as we move on. And I'm quite happy with the fact that both entities have been able to flag out explicitly the issue of transformation. And one move from a PMI is that Black women youth are quite critical towards the future of our country, especially in the science and innovative space. And for us to achieve the excellence that Honorable Boshoff is relating to, we ought to give opportunities and give rise to transformation, or else the status quo will remain. Our Black South Africans, young women, will still be on the back foot in terms of us achieving what we call a non-racial, non-sexist, democratic South Africa. Therefore, a transformative agenda is quite critical, and I'm quite excited by both chairs of these two boards that they were able to put it as a flagship issue within their institutions. However, it is important, Chair, on SANSA specifically, to indicate that just to get an indication around their inability to get the classifications correct, was it because of issues of capacity within an institution, or has the department not played a fundamental role in the process mapping of their APPs? Because the issues of classifications and so on are quite critical. And it's quite a small issue, but it has led to them getting an unqualified audit outcome with audit outcome as it is. The last point I want to make on SANSA is the issue of the resource limitations. How do they see, because of course with the budget that has been presented yesterday, the mid-budget that has been presented by the Minister of Finance, it's quite clear that our resources are quite limited. How do they intend to navigate through these limitations of resources, given the expertise that they need within the institution? Will they be able to manage, or will they expect the committee to actually negotiate, if I may put it that way, on their behalf for extra rents towards their budget? And if that is the case, how much will they need to make sure that they become operational at an optimal level? With the NCIR, we are quite happy with the work that you do. However, it is important that we expedite the process of dealing with consequence management. We should be getting a report to say, given the circumstances, this is what we have done, because you're a huge institution. And you become very critical to the research asset of the country. Most institutions are relying on this particular institution for a resource, as a resource. Therefore, we ought to have a proper functioning institution that is able to take consequence management quite seriously. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mashati.
Thanks, Chair. Your sound is very low. But thanks for that. Yes. No, thanks for giving us an opportunity. I think once again, a good audit opinion that must be a message that we send, and we congratulate the team from the oversight body of the board and the leadership of management there. Well, on page 43 of the annual report, CSR, again, as I know, the DG, Dr. Philip Jaha, will raise it with us many times, that the National Treasury regulations on procurement hampers their growth. It was a public entity mandated to perform the work being contracted or tendered for from contracting directly with government and SOEs. And they are saying this has resulted in a loss of revenue opportunities amounting to approximately 450 million. And this is just one entity. And I know, Chair, this is what the DG has been consistent with, pleading with us that, you know, if there's anything we can do for them, so that, you know, apart from obviously voted funds, that we can assist them to perform their function well, is to try and deal with this part of procurement between government entities and between government entities and between government itself, departments themselves with some of these entities. I mean, the DG would have stated all the many examples that, you know, they are now allowed, they are now forced to also do tenders, you know, in order for them to get those jobs, whereas it would have been easier and cheaper for those departments to get such things. Maybe it's high time now, Chair. I think we've been singing this thing for 2.5 years now, that we'll speak to the Treasury. Maybe we must have a joint committee with them, invite DFI, maybe the DG, to do a presentation on, obviously, they would have to, he would have to speak to all the entities that are, you know, dealing with innovation things there. On what is it that they think in this department they can do, that department, you know, so that maybe we can see if there's a need that we must push for some of the changes in the PFMA, so that this department and this department and entities can, you know, get some of the jobs from other other government departments. I mean, it's government to government. I'm sure it will not be that difficult for us to convince Treasury on all of those things. Maybe say for innovation contracts amounting to maybe 3 million per or 5 million per department, they must first look internal. Maybe we must just find a way, but obviously we would have to work with the department, the DG there, to assist us to do a presentation with proper examples. That in this Department of Communication, for an example, this is what they are procuring, which we believe we've got internal capacity to do. So that, I mean, government loses a lot of money on advertising such things on national newspapers, local newspapers, you know, mostly Sunday newspapers, whereas it could be a simple thing of a name or sense to the department. And entities who are in that space can then bid together. I mean, it becomes easier that way. Maybe we must look at having a joint committee with the Committee of Appropriations, or maybe a Committee of Finance directly, so that we are able to assist them in this regard, Chair. And I'm lobbying all yourself and all honourable members to really maybe let's do it now, because I mean, imagine 450 million, and I mean, if it went to tender on something like this, I'm sure it's 900 million. So the department is losing, but also our entities are losing a lot of opportunities for revenue here. So maybe let's look at that. on page 73 again of the annual report, we express a concern with not meeting the human resources and industry development support performance target. In relation to the industry development support, what mitigations are being implemented to improve the situation? In relation to human resources, on page 107, the CSIR stated that a lack of an affirming career development and performance management culture, as well as an uncoordinated and regional approach to workforce planning and recruitment, have exacerbated an already challenging aspect of its business. The CSIR has been voted for a number of years as one of the best employers in the STI sector. Therefore, in the situation described above, that I've just mentioned, a new issue resulting from the restructuring needed to implement its current strategy. They need that thing. Alternatively, is the legacy issue, and how has this been addressed? So those are my comments. I think for Sandra Chair, I had already given my questions earlier on. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Litsie. I'll now hand over to colleagues from SAMHSA, 1502. We're supposed to conclude at 12:30. I'll hand over to colleagues from SAMHSA. Perhaps if colleagues could use 10 minutes to respond to comments and questions from members, and then also then hand over after that back to the CSIR. So I'll hand over first to colleagues from SAMHSA. You may go ahead.
Thank you, Chair and honourable members, for the opportunity for the questions. Quite valuable and helping us to move forward with our organisation in a positive manner. I will touch on a few questions and then I'll leave some for the CEO. Starting with the AIT, I think what is happening now, there is an engagement between the DSI and the DPE and at the DG level. However, there is more engagement at the ministerial level with commitment, and member Mletsia mentioned about buying and the exchange of money from one institution to the other. That's also another one of the concerns that I think FAMSA has, this one of purchasing a government facility, what is going to be used by another government facility. But discussions are underway at DSI at DG level and should be escalated to the ministerial level. The other question that I would like to touch on is the issue of the audit and the stability and the capacity within the finance section. The institution has started on the work of appointing the CFO and trying to resource that unit. It's one of the backbones of an institution, the finances, and this should really be stable and be in order. However, we have noted that the committee said they would like to get more information and progress on this area and the audit findings going forward. The CEO can get more in detail into what have been the challenges. We have mentioned that it has been the classification of the item and the fact that we have been using manual Excel spreadsheets. We have not been very, very much somehow cumbersome, and the human element creeps into that. Then the party, the members asked about the party. Unfortunately, we have not had any party because of the COVID-19 regulation, as well as resource constraints. I think the members are quite aware that all institutions and FAMSA, being one of the babies under the DSI stable, has resource constraints, and it's quite encouraging to hear that the PPC is keen to assist us in this regard with engagements with the National Treasury. We will appreciate that very much. I'm not sure whether there are plans of having the party at some point in time in the future. However, I think we would like to mention one of the annual events that the Santa participates strongly in, which is one of the events that may be very, very much useful for the Parliamentary Committee. The International Astronautical Congress is an annual event that takes place across the world in different countries. This year it took place in Dubai. Next year it's going to take place in Paris. And prior to this event, there is a two-day session, a segment for parliamentarians to meet across the world and to discuss issues that are pertaining to space issues. So that's something that FAMSA through the DSI should consider inviting the PPC for the engagements with their counterparts across the world. In the past, the past PPC for DSI and DTI, and I'm representing DTI in this board, have participated in this Congress, and they have found it quite interesting and bringing a lot of insight into the work that they do, because it's a meeting of all the space agencies across the world, all industry bodies, industry participants, the academia, the students. There are various segments statements that would fight the PPC, despite the parliamentary segment that is preceding the Congress. However, such information, I think, will be shared with the PPC via the department. As I've just said that I am representing the GTIC, maybe I can still 1 second, Chair, to make the committee aware that we have been waiting on the state industry regulatory bill with the DSR and other stakeholders. And it's quite at a matured stage now where it can be sent out for gazetting, and it will be brought to the committee. Probably a joint committee, the DSI with the GTI committee can meet to look into this. But I thought when we are here, we can we may just as well alert you on that on that work, because the primary bill that we have was enacted in 1993, quite outdated. And with all the developments that have taken place in the country and worldwide, it's not keeping up with what has taken place. And us being the member of the United Nations, there are various treaties that we must comply with, and we are not complying with some of those without domesticating our legislation. Chair, would say I'm sorry for stealing that time. However, I thought it would be very much important to just share that information. I will hand over to the chair, I mean the CEO, to come on respond on other questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jaja. Chair, I know you gave us 10 minutes. I'm not sure if you want me to just take a minute or two.
You can take 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Chair, just on there's a few issues of questions raised on the financial, so the audit itself. Just to give you a sense, we did put two staff members in suspension, did a full investigation, and now we're now going through a disciplinary hearing. I just wanted to point out it's a people issue, systems and processes. So on the system side, and the systems has been there for the last 10 years, but we are currently revamping, and I gave the insight into SAGE and financial management software and so on. And then other aspects is coming online. I maybe want to just ask Ms. Leonie Engelbrecht, she's our acting CFO, just to give a quick insight in terms of the reasons for the audit issues, and then also to talk around the stabilization of the financial team in terms of resources. Leonie, you want to come in quickly on that one?
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chair. So the audit outcome was an unqualified audit opinion with two material misstatements, and of which the one is with regards to the late submission of the AFS and, of course, then as mentioned earlier, a classification, but then also prior year adjustment. So the main focus, the main challenge for us is then the late submission of the AFS, and this is what we are addressing with the investigation, and then also the action that we're taking on the outcomes of that investigation, which includes consequence management, as the CEO has alluded to. Then also with the new financial software, of course, that would assist to streamline the drafting and the review process and also ensure a high level of accuracy. The finance team is also undergoing training. Although that is an ongoing activity, we are now also focusing on individual skills capacity building and also receiving support to improve their performance. We've also implemented a number of initiatives to install financial discipline and also to improve outputs, and some of this includes ongoing reviews, automating processes, provision of the updated ERP, improved communication, and then also to have a preliminary AFS drafted and reviewed before year end to ensure that we don't run into the same challenges that we've run into in this financial year. Thank you.
Thanks, Leonie. I'm also going to link up, Chair. There was a question around navigating through the limited resources. So yes, absolutely. I think if there's a way where the committee can assist in terms of addressing that particular resource constraint, that will seriously assist us. The problem I think we're probably sitting with at the moment, a number of the projects that's come through, it's mainly focusing on the CapEx, but we seem to be limited in terms of continuous support on the operational aspects of it. So we get funding around, you know, putting up a new infrastructure, but the actual operations of that becomes a challenge. So where Stanza is moving towards is more towards increasing its revenue generation in terms of growth, but we also, in terms of the new business model that I already alluded to, looking at Stanza more from a commercialization perspective, rather than operating as a pure Schedule 3A public entity. And I think it also speaks to some of the procurement issues raised by our colleagues from the CSIR. So we're also looking, as part of the business model rehashing exercise, looking at strategic procurement, how we can do things more smartly, looking at e-processing and so on. So there's some developments, but I think the issues around the PFMA still remain. And then there was a question around EOSAT 1. So there has been, yes, 340 million rand spent today. But what I want to indicate that for the 340 million, a lot of that was R&D. So there's a lot of intellectual property that has been developed in terms of the satellite segment itself. And so what we have done is taken a full stock of the IP, and then with the Denel sort of world that currently they're experiencing, we're looking at the take-up of the IP itself from Denel into Stanza. And what I should mention, Chair, is that we... The industry is already localizing and exporting, you know, products, services, components, systems, subsystems, internationally in the global market. And a lot of that IP was generated locally. Ms. Mujaja had indicated the, you know, the IEC. We were there 2 weeks ago. Just to give you an example, Mohammed bin Rashid Space Center is landing a rover on the moon in 2024. But the wheels for that rover come from South Africa. The software for that rover, the heart and the brain, comes from South Africa. The communications payload for that rover comes from South Africa. So we're splitting a lot of the intellectual property that's coming from the local space sector and pushing that globally. So we want to do a lot more of that. And that's where the commercialization framework comes into play. But just to complete the narrative around the EOSAT 1, we are in discussion with the DSI in terms of looking at how we capitalize on the existing expenditure and look at more cost-effective options for completing the satellite. So we do have options in terms of how we could expedite the completion of that project, because it does eventually come back to the reputation South Africa has in terms of completing the missions it's put on itself. And then the last one, Chair, I think is on the National Skills Conference. I'm going to ask Leanne, who's responsible for our HPD program, to answer that one. Thanks, Chair. Leanne?
Thank you, CEO, and thank you, Chair and members. So I'm going to address the question on national skills and key skills and capability. Unfortunately, Chair, we did not participate in the National Skills Conference this year, although we have been putting a lot of effort into developing scarce skills and capability, particularly in a variety of areas that the space agency needs going forward. So what I can tell you is that we look at the entire pipeline. So our science engagement program has been concentrating on space clubs that are built around robotics and preparing young learners for the fourth industrial revolution. We also look at then university students' interventions, webinars for them. And we've also participated in the last 8 months, we've participated in 10 student career fairs where we have been promoting the career choices around space science and technology, and particularly and right across the board, programming, physics, software development, engineering skills, radar engineering, electronic engineering, etc. We also have developed a research portal, which is currently being fully upgraded so that it can have both a research side and a student side, so that students can easily access our researchers and find out what projects they're working on. And we've been encouraging our researchers to promote projects right from the honours level up to PhD. We've also registered ourselves as host institution for the DSI HSRC internship program, and we are currently hosting 6 interns this year. We did actually ask the HSRC for 29 interns across the agency, but we were granted 6. We've also registered as a host institution with the Innovation Hub in Pretoria for their internship program, and we're hosting 2 interns this year through that program as well. We also, this year, hosted our SANSA workshop virtually for the first time, and we had 44 postgraduate students presenting projects of interest to the space agency. We also ran for the first time this year a student hackathon using the topic of space weather as a topic to get students excited about programming and coding around algorithms for space weather product and development. And there's a number of other initiatives that we are utilizing our major projects, Digital Earth Africa, the Satellite Build Program, the Space Infrastructure Hub, and the New Space Weather Center, towards creating excitement in science, technology, and innovation, and to get people into those fields, but then also to help to develop the capability. All of our researchers are required to supervise students and to participate in university programs so that young people have access to the experts as role models, but also as mentors and coaches. And we will definitely look forward to participating in the National Skills Conference next year, which will also be coincide with the birth of a number of our project ideas that are coming on board now. So I hope that addresses the concerns about skills and capability. Thank you very much, CEO.
Thanks, Leanne. And thanks, Chair. I'm going to hand back to you. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, can I maybe come in, Chair? This is Thokozani from CSIR.
You may continue.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Yeah, I think on my side, really, I've been spared by honourable members. There isn't much that I would talk to directly. Suffice it to say that I'm encouraged by the level of urgency that is displayed by honourable members on this issue of treasury regulations. I mean, it's been on the table now for a while, so somewhere we should really find a way of putting this behind us. So I'm just encouraged by the fact that the honourable members are also looking at this the same way that we are. I think I'll just hand over to the CEO and the executive to deal with the questions that they were fielded to us. Over to you, CEO.
Well, thank you very much, Professor Majozi. So thank you, honourable members, for the comments and the questions raised. So if I can perhaps start from the top on the questions raised by the honourable chair of the committee. I think we take note of the comments around consequence management. I think it's an issue that we take quite seriously within the organisation. In fact, as last week, Thursday, we're having this discussion in terms of how we can improve on matters pertaining to consequence management with regard to the irregular expenditure that we experience within the CSIR. We are pleased, though, that year to date, for this financial year, we have had no instance of irregular or fraudulent expenditure in the organization. And we have to ascribe this to the heightened level of awareness that we have created within the CSIR. And we've been on a campaign in terms of education, but a lot of this really is about people not understanding process. And of course, there are a few instances where there's variations in time, but a lot of it really is about people not understanding process. And we feel that this is making a difference. We've also had to make improvements in terms of our own procurement process and tighten up, I think, in areas where we felt perhaps we were exposed from a risk point of view. But I think there's of course, the limitation, I think Honorable Boshoff spoke to this to some degree, that in instances where people leave the organization, I think it was the Honorable Chair who was referring to this, we are somehow curtailed in terms of what we can do, except in instances where there was a loss to the CSIR or the individual benefited unfairly from their conduct. We haven't had instances like those in the recent past. and therefore most of these are really issues of not following CSR procedure and processes which are dealt with using the internal disciplinary process. So when someone has exited the organization, we are somehow limited in terms of pursuing a disciplinary process for someone who's no longer an employee of the CSR, except of course if it is a criminal issue associated with that. And as I said, we haven't had those in the recent past. I think the question around and the comment around Ms. Patricia, which the chair has spoken to, and perhaps to your question, Honorable Chair of the Committee, on whether the Department of Science and Innovation has been involved in this. I think DFI has been extensively involved, and we're very grateful for the support that we've received, you know, from the Minister to the DG and to the DDGs that we've worked with. I think we've had a lot of support from the department in terms of trying to address this issue. And the progress is very slow on the part of National Treasury. Let me just give an example. I think most of the members will be aware of the incident that took place earlier this year with Transnet in the airport here in Durban, where they were hacked and their systems were compromised. In fact, that happened at a time when Transnet was working with the CSR to get a single source consignment from National Treasury for the CSR to assist Transnet on issues of information security. That was declined by National Treasury. And unfortunately, a week after we received the letter that we're not allowed to assist Transnet, this thing happened. I'm not trying to say that we could have avoided it. But I'm giving an example of, I think, the risk that the state gets exposed to as a result of, I think, not being able to work together in a collaborative and in a cooperative manner. So there are many missed opportunities like this. I mean, the cost to the country is a result of this particular incident in our port here in KwaZulu-Natal was significant. And perhaps something could have been done differently to address that particular issue. So we would appreciate any support in terms of trying to improve the way that government procures from itself. Because we see ourselves as providing a solution to a problem, I think, that the state has. And coming to the questions by Honorable Bosho around the issues of transformation and excellence, I cannot agree with you more. I think excellence